It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Even with the recent fluctuations in the polls, many Republicans are afraid that a low turnout for Donald Trump at the top of the ticket could hurt their own down-ballot races. Can a top-of-the-ticket unpopular candidate hurt down-ballot candidates, including incumbents like Illinois Republican Mark Kirk? Well, here to address that issue is David Daley. He was the editor of Salon for many years when he interviewed top GOP strategists to detail the story of how something called Operation Red Map was able to redistrict congressional districts across the country and secure a Republican majority in Congress, regardless of what happens at the top of the ticket. And he has written a book about it. Can't say the name of the book. It's called Rat Bleeped. And he's been on with us before to talk about it. But in the light of what we're seeing now, we're welcoming him back. David Daley, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Okay. For people that didn't hear the first time we talked about this, can you briefly explain what Operation Red Map is, was, and how it turned out to be such a brilliantly successful strategy for the GOP?
Absolutely. Let me drop a little schoolhouse rock right at the beginning and get it out of the way. We redistrict every state legislative and congressional line every 10 years after the census. So we rip up the old maps and draw new ones. State legislatures have the power to do this. It's an extraordinarily valuable power because politicians love being able to pick their own voters. For years, both sides did this. They did it together. It was an incumbent protection racket. It was a way of keeping party discipline in line. What the Republicans realized in 2008, after Barack Obama is reelected and the Democrats take a supermajority in the Senate and also hold on to the House, is that they could use this as a really great partisan weapon if they could figure out the rules of redistricting in every single state and then go about being sure that they had the only voice in the room when it came to drawing new maps after the 2010 census. They do a brilliant job of this. The goal of Red Map is to flip control of legislative chambers. And Karl Rove writes an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, and he says, we are going to plot our comeback through redistricting. And it will only take us 100 state house seats. If we can win 100 state house seats, we will have complete control over drawing 193 of the 435 congressional seats. It's a devious, incredible plan. It's a thoroughly modern and inventive use of the gerrymander, the oldest political trick in the book, and it has worked brilliantly.
When they did this, they targeted specific states, and what's interesting is many of those states are what are the so-called swing states in the national presidential election as well.
And yet there's not a competitive House seat in any of these states. The states that the Republicans did the best job on were blue and purple states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, North Carolina, Wisconsin. And they were able to take control of enough legislative seats in all of these states to control the chambers, draw themselves new lines. And in 2012, the first election held on these new maps, they win fewer seats than the Democrats in both U.S. House races and also state House races, but claim such a wild majority of the seats that they are often able to hold on to super majorities in state legislatures despite fewer seats. On the congressional level, it's especially stark if you look at it state by state. So Pennsylvania, 100,000 more votes for a Democratic House candidate, but a 13-5 Republican delegation. Ohio, the ultimate 50-50 state, 12-4 Republican delegation. Michigan, 240,000 more votes for Democratic candidates, but a 9-5 Republican delegation. North Carolina, more votes for Democratic candidates, but a 10-3 Republican delegation. State by state, this makes the difference in building the Republican majority in the House, and it makes it possible now, because these districts have been drawn to be so non-competitive and so specifically tailored to one party, that even this year, it is impossible to imagine a scenario under which Democrats can take back the House.
They need, what, 30 seats to take the House back? What do you suspect could happen out of those 30 seats?
It seems like the best hope is that they will get to 15. you could imagine maybe a couple more, perhaps even a couple fewer, but there simply aren't enough competitive seats left. Most of the websites that will look at this on a district-by-district level already have it called for the Republicans. The crystal ball at the University of Virginia is perhaps the best of these, and they've already got 225 seats nailed down for the Republicans, 193 for the Democrats. It means that there's 17 competitive toss-up seats left out of 435. The Democrats could win all 17 of those, still wouldn't be enough to take control. They have to somewhere find an additional 8 seats. And the truly amazing thing about this is that there's all of these states that are going to go for Clinton. Pennsylvania, Michigan, seems like North Carolina. Ohio seems to be perhaps lining up in the Trump column, but we'll see. And you can't really find a competitive House race in any of those states. I mean, there in Indiana, you have the open seat in the ninth, which is at least considered conceivably on the map. Most folks think it leans Republican, but you can't even find a race as competitive as that in these other states. And it is a testament to just how much these lines matter and how brilliantly they were drawn and how perfect the technology is that allows you to carve us up as precisely as this.
You see it on the other side as well. Here in Illinois, this similar strategy has benefited Democrats, especially with the way that they were able to draw up these districts in the Chicagoland area, extended Chicagoland area. So even though here in Illinois you have a wildly unpopular, on the state level, you have a pretty unpopular, you know, state majority leader in Michael Madigan, you see the same strategy in place to keep these guys around for a long time.
Yeah, there were two states that the Democrats did a decent job of gerrymandering. And I would say those are Illinois and Maryland. I think that the gerrymander in Illinois is kind of an interesting one because it still essentially falls in line with the seat vote ratio. You do have more Democratic voters there, so it's not as if there were a lot of seats stolen, but it was certainly an innovative way of drawing lines and a pretty impressive way of drawing lines, kind of drawing out from the city and kind of doing, I don't know, pieces of pizza, Chicago, and taking a slice of it and then going out. The way that the lines are carved matter, especially when you have a city as big as Chicago or that probably concentrates where most of the, you know, Democratic voters are. So how you slice those things up can make all the difference in the map. In Maryland, the Democrats were especially fanciful. Anybody who's not driving, I recommend taking a look at the Democratic gerrymander of Maryland. Go ahead and Google the shapes of those districts, and you will be truly horrified for the state of our democracy.
We're talking with David Daley, former editor of Salon. He is a political journalist and has written a book about Operation Red Map, which was a concentrated effort by GOP leadership to try to reorganize and focus on specific races that could affect the district remapping in key states and how that's playing out now. We're starting to see, even though there was a little bit of concern by a number of Republicans earlier in the race, that Donald Trump might bring them down with him as far as people that go in and are voting straight party for Democrats instead because they're supporting the other candidate, that it doesn't seem like it's going to swing the House at the very least. So, David, there's been a lot of talk about how the system is rigged by Donald Trump over the last few months. And I think what's interesting in how some of this talk is resonating isn't so much that we're seeing voter fraud or people going in and voting, pretending to be someone else, or that we're seeing faked ballots. There's been a lot of investigation into that. It doesn't seem to be significant. But when you see something like Operation Red Map work, which does seem to be subverting the will of the population on a statewide level, that I think sinks down into the way people think about what their vote is worth.
Well, I think we all want our elections to matter, and we want the side with the most votes to win. I mean, I edited Salon, so people can imagine where my basic vote goes. But this is not a matter in which I have my thumb on the scale. I mean, Republicans won big in 2010, and they should have enjoyed the spoils of that victory. 2012 was a Democratic year, 2014 a Republican year, 2016 looks like a Democratic year. All of these elections ought to count if we want the idea of a representative democracy to continue to function. When these institutions are immune or insulated from the voters at the ballot box, they cease to essentially be a functioning democratic institutions. Elections other than the one ending in zero ought to matter for the House. The House is supposed to be the branch of government that is most responsive to the will of the people. And we are going to wake up on Wednesday morning, and you're going to have, in all likelihood, President Clinton again. And you're, in all likelihood, going to have a Republican House. And this Republican House is already talking about impeachment. There are a half dozen Republicans who have already gone on the record and said all of these investigations are going to continue, and they may well lead to impeachment. So this is where we're going to stand. It's probably an overwhelming majority of folks representing, voting for President Clinton, a minority of votes electing a Republican Congress, and that Republican Congress moving on investigations that could lead to another impeachment. It's fundamentally not democratic, and we ought to be really, really concerned about it.
With this very careful crafting of districting, if that has created in itself the obstructionist mindset, because when you can pick your voters from one party, you're going, the real race, as we've seen in a lot of solid places where it's, you know, solidly red, solidly blue, is the real race is in the primary. And
it's
this,
so true.
Yeah, this seems to be driving out moderates. So
you're exactly right.
Has Operation Red Map then inadvertently helped something like Donald Trump, who has pretty extreme policies on certain issues, immigration, things that are on the far right? Would we have even seen somebody like that become a party nominee were it not for this effort to carve up these congressional districts?
I think there are a lot of factors that led to the creation of Donald Trump, but I do think that the way that these districts were drawn up helped create the conditions under which his rise was possible. What happens when you have so few competitive districts is exactly what you said. The only election that matters becomes the party primary, which is always essentially a race amongst activists in the base. It's usually really low turnout. The most passionate and extreme voices tend to get their candidate. And as a result, we send to Washington people who are not especially interested in compromise or governing or dialogue. They don't have to listen to the other side in these districts. Indeed, listening to the other side, stretching out your hand across the aisle, is the one thing that guarantees you a primary challenge back home. So that is the one thing you don't do. And as a result, you see the rise of things like the House Freedom Caucus. You see the rise of votes on the debt ceiling that we never had to this degree before. You see the unwillingness to sort of govern and work together and find compromise, even though there are lots and lots of issues where we could find common ground and there seems to be a pretty realistic path forward on. And we don't get it. It's largely because we have changed the tone and tenor of politics by the kinds of people these districts elect and send to Washington. They are more conservative, they are purer in their views, they are less willing to talk to the other side, and it drives out the moderates, it revs up the base, and you saw in the last nomination cycle on the Republican side, you had 17 candidates, and essentially the last two standing were Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, who are the kinds of people who want to stand up and say no. The deal makers, the folks who were the compromisers, who had a bipartisan reputations, folks like Jeb Bush, folks like Kasich, there was not a whole lot of interest in those candidates amongst the Republican primary field.
They didn't seem to be energizing anybody because the status quo and maintaining the status quo is what people seem to be frustrated with. And that might be driving people to the extremes. Well, David Daley, thank you again for joining us, especially this close to the election. I will gingerly try to describe the name of David Daley's book. It's called Rat Bleeped, which is from a quote involving how people do some gerrymandering and political trickery. It's not the actual bleeped, but you can figure it out. David, thank you so much for being
Rhymes
with
ducked.
Yes. Rhymes with ducked.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
a lot. I really appreciate it.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back after this. It is the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.